Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. In a moment, we're going to talk about the future of the Florida Democratic Party, and later on, we'll open up the phone lines. But first, one listener comment about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we were talking about the holdup in that $2,000 COVID relief check in Washington, D.C., and the debate about whether or not it should happen at all. And here's what one listener had to say following yesterday's show.
Stephen St. Tito is listening to the show today about the stimulus package. I first wanted to mention something. Hashtag force the vote. The Jimmy Dore, Cornel West, Dylan Radigan, Nina Turner, and many other progressives are pushing the Democrats, as well as Republicans, for a vote on Medicare for all during this pandemic. And with the midterms coming up, many believe that it'll pass right now just for the fact that you would never want it to go on record that you voted against national health care during a major pandemic. There were way over 300,000 deaths in America. I did want to mention about the stimulus package. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell were against the $2,000 stimulus package to go to each citizen before the election. It was politically expedient for Nancy Pelosi to be against it, even though she knew people were hurting. She was interviewed on many shows, and she made it clear it ain't gonna happen. That's exactly what she said. And she said Trump just wanted his name on a check. I don't care if Bozo the Clown's name is on a check. People are hurting. And it's amazing that people will question Trump's intentions or his motives of why he's doing it. Does it really matter at this point?
Well, that comment came in after the program yesterday. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Coming up in just a few days, on January 9th, the Florida Democratic Party will choose a new leader. And the sides are battling for supremacy in this one. The leading candidate seems to be former Miami Mayor Manny Diaz, who's been endorsed by a variety of people, including the Hillsborough Hispanic Caucus and the Broward Democratic Hispanic Caucus. He's been endorsed by Charlie Crist, Lois Frankel, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Frederica Wilson, Kerry Meek, Donna Shalala, Kendrick Meek, Alex Sink, and one-time Tampa mayoral candidate Francisco Sanchez. That's just a partial list of all the people that have endorsed Manny Diaz. The leading contender against him is Ion Townsend, who's the Democratic chair in Hillsborough County. And we're going to talk about this race right now with Patrick Mantega, who's editor and publisher of La Gazzetta, which is a newspaper published weekly in Ybor City in English, Italian, and Spanish. And Patrick's column in that newspaper is a must-read for politicos here in Florida. And Patrick, welcome back to WMNF. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great. Thank you for inviting me on today.
So, Patrick, there's a battle shaping up for leadership in the Democratic Party. The vote is January 9th. I mentioned Ion Townsend and Manny Diaz as the two major candidates, with Diaz getting a lot of endorsements so far. Are there any other contenders, or are those the two major contenders?
No, there are some other contenders. There's a lady up in Alachua County who is running, Cynthia Moore Chestnut, and then there's a Janelle Christensen who's also running. And so, you know, this is because of the failures in Florida for Democrats, and a major failure in South Florida, and a failure with Hispanics. And so some of the reaction has been is, you know, maybe we need to have a, you know, Manny Diaz, who's Latin, running the party because maybe he can fix the problem. But there's some concerns. I have concerns. I know of others who have concerns that perhaps he might make the problem worse with Hispanics.
Why would he make the problem worse?
Well, you know, Florida's the Democrats in Florida that are Hispanic are generally Puerto Ricans, Mexican Americans, Colombian Americans, the others. The Cuban Americans in Miami have generally been a very loyal group to Republicans, and he comes from that group, and part of the reason why Republicans keep winning the Cuban population, as far as I'm concerned, is because the issue of Cuba continues to be an issue. So long as the embargo is in place, so long as the restrictions are in place, Cuba will always be an issue, and it will always be talked about. And there's many of us who believe that, you know, if we got rid of this issue and normalized relations, that we'd be able to talk to the Cuban Americans about something other than Cuba. And so there's a concern that perhaps Manny Diaz might inform Biden's people to actually try to do the exact opposite, to not resolve the issue with Cuba. In fact, there was an editorial out of the Miami Herald yesterday. Biden can't afford to make the same mistakes as Obama did in Cuba. And the Miami Herald is basically saying that Biden should keep everything in place, go against his promise to remove some of the restrictions that Donald Trump did, and in fact kind of double down and ask Cuba to do some reforms. I don't know what those reforms would be that would make America happy, and then we would eliminate things. This has also been done right in the shadow yesterday of Donald Trump putting back in the putting Cuba back on the terrorist list of nations.
He did that yesterday.
Yeah.
No, not widely reported, I got to say. Let's talk about the two leading candidates. Who is Manny Diaz, who's gotten all these endorsements?
Manny Diaz is an attorney who was mayor of Miami. He came to fame during Ileana Gonzalez. Ileana Gonzalez was the young boy who mother died in the crossing from Cuba to Miami. Some of the family there got the young man, and when the father asked for him back in Cuba, America wanted to deliver him back, as were our treaties with the world on how you would handle this. And Manny Diaz and others volunteered to be the lawyers for this family, and they basically ignored Bill Clinton, Janet Reno, the U.S. government, and caused a showdown there that resulted in federal officers having to raid the home and take the young boy to deliver to his father.
There was that famous photograph where the federal officers, who were armed to the teeth, sure, I got to say,
right,
went into the home where Elian Gonzalez was living and got him out of some bedroom or a closet. Go ahead.
And so, you know, I would tell you that that photograph probably led to Gore losing some votes in Miami, and considering how tight that election is, I could even tie that photograph leading to Gore losing Florida and losing the presidency. And Manny Diaz was an integral part of that, and when I had a phone conversation with him the other day and asked him if he regretted anything from the Ileana Gonzalez days, he said the only thing he regretted was that those troops aimed a gun at him and the family, and that Janet Reno was wrong, and that the U.S. government was acting un-American. He basically doubled down. He might be the only person besides, you know, five other people in Miami who actually believe the Ileana Gonzalez thing, that the U.S. government did the wrong thing. And so, you know, this guy wants to head up the Democratic Party. I would say that he hurt the Democrats tremendously in that presidential election. After that, he no longer was a Democrat, switched to be independent, ran for mayor, ran twice for mayor, never was elected as a Democrat. He only became a Democrat after being mayor. And so I just kind of question his Democratic credentials.
Well, what you're pointing at is perhaps a more conservative candidate, Manny Diaz, in the running for the Florida Democratic chair on January 9th. So
yeah,
let's talk about Ione Townsend from Hillsborough County. She is calling herself the progressive candidate. Am I right?
She is. You know, I don't know what that means. As a lifelong Democrat and a lifelong liberal, I've not found any real substantive differences between me and progressives. But since I've been a Democrat for so long, I'm no longer progressive, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, she's calling herself progressive Democrat, and there are progressives who are backing her. You know, that's going to have to be her pathway. Manny Diaz appears to have a lot of the establishment, and he's going to have some of the, I assume, county chairs down in the South Florida area. So Ione's pathway has got to be to win Central Florida and everything north.
Well, we're talking about the upcoming January 9th election for the Democratic chair of Florida. The leadership is changing. Terry Rizzo is stepping down, and there's a race to replace her, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. You know, there was a lot of talk, Patrick, about how well Hillary Clinton did in the previous presidential election, 2016, in Miami-Dade County, and how poorly Joe Biden did compared to Hillary Clinton. And a lot of it, a lot of the talk is that the Latinos who live in Dade County view Democrats now more as socialist, and that scares the Latinos in Dade County. What about that?
Donald Trump's campaign and the Republicans did a tremendous job of selling the issue that the Democrats were socialism, and they wrapped it up that since we wanted, you know, health care, and since we wanted to help make the our system of justice more fair and things like this, that this was socialism. And the Democrats really failed to respond back that you know, what made Venezuela what Venezuela is and what created Cuba to be Cuba is, it wasn't about, you know, health care. It was about totalitarianism, about dictatorships, about the things that Donald Trump was doing, about trying to subvert justice systems, about using federal troops and towns where they shouldn't be. And so we just failed to understand that this was working, and the Democrats failed to respond and give feedback. And now there's concern that people misread this and decide that all of a sudden Biden can't make U.S. policy with Cuba better, because he'll be looking like he's a socialist. And this really wasn't what this argument was about. In fact, you know, when Obama had loosened things up with Cuba, Hillary did better. So I think there's a strong argument that more relaxed U.S. policy towards Cuba actually, you know, takes this issue off the table, and we would actually do better with Latins.
You know, Patrick, what I don't understand is I think the Republicans were successful in equating liberal policies that the Democrats have as the same policies as repressive governments like Venezuela, and yeah. And I wonder why the Democrats can't fight that better, because, you know, you guys as Democrats have had a long history of progressives, of people that fought for health care for all. FDR fought for the minimum wage and fought for labor rights. And then it was the Democrats who turned the tide on civil rights when they came over to the civil rights side in the 1960s. That's what passed civil rights legislation. The Democrats don't, you know, they have been champions, I think, of more economic and social justice and democracy in the U.S., so why can't they translate what their record is into what it actually is, instead of having Republicans say, well, you want a repressive government like Venezuela?
I think it's a bad brain trust in the Democratic Party, especially down here in Florida, where we're not ahead of the game. We're always behind it. We also are not forming good relations with Latins as they come in. And the Republicans seem to be a lot focused on it. Even somebody like Rick Scott, who the Latins don't know anything to, he would put his picture at the airports when all those Puerto Ricans were coming in from Hurricane Maria, and he had an office set up there with his picture in it at the airports to help them. And Bill Nelson, who was helping him, didn't do those same things. And so, you know, They put a good Republican face on some of these small programs they do, and the Democrats don't. And then a lot of times we are trying to do the same kind of policies Republicans are, but we just can't. We just don't get the credit for it. You know, when you look at the hard line of Marco Rubio and others on the issue of Cuba, when you take a look at it, the Democratic congressional people down in Miami are just as hardline. Wasserman Schultz is just as hardline as Marco Rubio, but to doesn't get Republican votes, Cuban Republican votes because of it.
Well, Wasserman Schultz is hard line on Cuba. She's very conservative on the issue of Cuba, yeah. And it hasn't brought anybody over. You know,
Donna Shalala had just lost hard line on Venezuela.
Yeah.
But she lost.
You know, one thing, though, that I've heard from the Spanish-speaking community is at least former governor, now U.S. Senator Rick Scott, spoke in Spanish. So if he would go on during a hurricane emergency, even in his fractured Spanish, he would make the attempt to reach out to the Spanish-speaking community. And so if you have Manny Diaz, I'm just assuming, and this is maybe a wrong assumption on my part, that he'll be able to speak Spanish fluently to a statewide audience, and that would be a first for the Democrats. You don't really have somebody that speaks Spanish, do you? In a statewide role.
Well, first of all, we had very few people in a statewide role. We've got one statewide elected official, and we've got a party chair. So, I mean, it's not a huge list to choose from. But, I mean, you don't have to elect for this. You could get a Democratic vice chair of the party who could speak Spanish and do this. You know, like I said, the big concern here is with Manny Diaz, at least in my view and in others that I talked to here in Tampa, is that, you know, is he going to be the chair of the Democratic Party first, or is he going to be loyal to the Cuban-American conservative community in Miami? Or is he going to be more loyal to his business and his business future? And so, you know, when you want somebody to run the Democratic Party, you want a true believer. And I don't know if his credentials show somebody who's a true believer. And so, you know, that's the concern here. Is the party going to be co-opted for other issues?
Patrick, the Democrats did not do so well November 3rd here in Florida.
Right.
They lost legislative seats. They lost congressional seats. And President Trump took the state by a wider margin than did Hillary Clinton. Why do you think that is? And how would the Democrats solve that problem if they want to make a comeback and be more competitive?
I think Democrats just have to start to engage the Latin community early on and engage them in a more meaningful way. You know, I would start with prayer breakfast with pastors, with Latin churches across Florida, talking to them every quarter or bringing in guests from around the country, leaders in the Democratic Party who are Hispanic, and to talk to them about what the party really is about its efforts to be better on the issues of immigration than the Republicans, on how the social safety net helps people who are struggling, to explain to them in detail the Democratic platform better, and to work on promoting people in the party, supporting Hispanic candidates. And I think that if you do that, and you do that when there's not an election on the horizon, you can actually make inroads. The problem with the Democrats is they continue to want to engage the Hispanic population, 30 days before the election. And anything further ahead of that is just about voter registration. It's not about really voter education. And so I think that there's a problem there with voter education. And I think that problem is actually starting to be felt around the country with Hispanics. And I think the Democratic Party does have to get closer to that group. We have to explain to them what we're doing positive for them as opposed to letting the Republicans craft that message.
Well, the election for the Florida Democratic chair is coming up January 9th. And Patrick, thanks a lot. I look forward to reading your column.
Thank you.
With Manny Diaz, and is there anything else you'd like to tell us? We've got a gubernatorial race coming up in 2022. We've also got a U.S. Senate race. Marco Rubio's up for re-election. How do you think the Democrats are going to do?
Well, I think the Democrats have a real issue at the moment because we have a very thin bench. Statewide name recognition, there just aren't many Democrats that have it. Outside of our agricultural commissioner, you start to have to look at people maybe like even a Charlie Crist who has statewide recognition, but isn't the new face on the block. So we don't have any real young rising stars that are making a name for themselves. And so, I think that's the biggest problem the Democratic Party has at the moment is that you got Nikki Fried and there could be some issues with her. And then after that, what do you have? And so I know there's even people right now trying to recruit Charlie Crist to see if he'll go for governor.
Mm. Very interesting. Who gets to vote for party chair?
I would say if I was guessing at this point, I think Manny Diaz wins.
But who gets to vote for him? Rank and file?
Vote for him. Oh, okay. It's a very complicated process. There are some weighted votes. Party chairs get to vote. State committee men and state committee women. Elected officials get to vote for him. Some of the caucuses do. But it's a very complex issue, and this is one of the other issues that the Democratic Party has is that there's very few people who are qualified to run for chair because of our antiquated rules, and then there's very few people who get to vote for chair because of our antiquated rules. And so what you end up with is trying to pick the best person amongst a very small group, and then a very small group of people actually making the decision. And we have the same problem on countywide levels where you have to, you know, be a member of certain standing to be able to run for county chair. And therefore, most of the time, there's only, you know, you only have a choice of 100 people, and only 100 people get to vote. And therefore, you know, it's kind of odd when you have, you know, over 400,000 Democrats in Hillsborough County. And you know, the vote of who's going to lead them is a vote of 100 people.
Let me just read this last question. I know I'm keeping you on a little bit longer.
That's
but
okay.
Jeff writes in, I'm thinking that if Cubans come to Florida, they felt Cuba was, to some degree, they weren't happy with the Cuban government, writes Jeff. So if Democrats are more associated with socialist ideas, how would you convince Cubans to become Democrats, writes Jeff?
Well, Cubans who come over currently generally aren't bringing over their whole family. So they have family back in Cuba. And if you were to go and poll Cubans in Cuba, you would find that the vast majority, while they might be unhappy with the government, want U.S. policy to change and to be kinder to Cuba. Because they know at the end of the day, it is hurting their families there. And so having better policies towards Cuba would probably make Cubans who come over here, as far as immigrants, a lot of them would probably be more likely to go with Democrat.
Yeah, the last time I had a cable repair guy come over to my house, he was from Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him about Cuba, and he said he still has family there, and he still goes back. He goes back twice a year. He's disappointed, though, that the plane service is diminishing.
Right, and so Democrats are having a hard time hooking themselves up to the fact that, you know, we'll offer you a better way of getting back and forth to Cuba. We'll offer a more fair playing field for Cuba to be able to prosper economically, and therefore would be able to do better for its people. So our current policies is really hurting those families back there. We've stopped remittances going on back there. But the problem is that most of the good voters are not new arrivals from Cuba. It's those people who are now senior citizens who came over, you know, in the early 60s. And that group is a great voting bloc. They vote all the time. And these newer Cubans who come over are not necessarily voting all the time. And so, therefore, a lot of times people feel like it's better to play towards that senior voter who has some money than it is to play for the new voter.
Well, Patrick Mantega, thanks a lot for coming back on WMNF, and I look forward to seeing your column on Friday.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Patrick.
Bye.
Patrick is the editor and publisher of La Gaceta, which is a newspaper published out of Ybor City. It was designed to serve the immigrants when it was founded about 100 years ago. And Patrick is the third editor of the paper, and his grandfather founded the paper way back in the we're about 100 years ago. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. By the way, his newspaper is La Gaceta. This is 88.5 FM. If you want to comment about anything you've heard here so far, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Well, President Trump's push for a $2,000 COVID relief check has stalled out. because of the Republicans in the U.S. Senate, with Republican senators deeply split over new spending. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell yesterday blocked a standalone vote that the Democrats had been advocating. Last night on the PBS NewsHour, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders was asked about McConnell's move to block the $2,000 relief checks. And this is what Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont, said.
It means that Senator McConnell and the Republican leadership are muddying the water and making it more difficult to do what the American people want. This is not a complicated issue. The House did the right thing last night. They understand that all across this country there is a level of economic desperation we have not seen in this country since the Great Depression. We're looking at people who are worried about being evicted, people who are going hungry, unable to feed their kids, people who in the middle of this terrible pandemic that you just discussed can't afford to go to a doctor, people accumulating more and more debt, and the people are crying out. They need help. Now, we managed to get $600 in direct payment in the bill that Trump finally signed. But everyone understands that is not enough. So all that we are asking Mitch McConnell to do, the Republican leadership here, is to allow an up or down vote on what the House did. If you want to vote against it, go home and explain why you voted against it. But let us have an up and down vote, a clean bill, in terms of what the House did last night. That's it.
Bernie Sanders, the U.S. Senator from Vermont, last night on the PBS NewsHour calling for an up-and-down vote on the $2,000 relief checks. He is backing President Trump on this one and vice versa. Well, if you want to comment about that, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Tropicana Field, where the testing has been going on for months and months here in St. Petersburg. Due to the volume of cars waiting currently in line, Tropicana Field, the testing site, is going to be closed, Pinellas County tells us. It'll be closed to new cars for the day at 12:15 today. Residents can be tested at a number of other sites in the county, but there is a lot of demand for testing, and Tropicana Field will be closing the testing site today at 12:15 p.m. Florida added more than 12,000 coronavirus cases and 105 virus-related deaths yesterday, according to the Florida Department of Health. That brings the total number of cases detected since March to 1.3 million here in Florida. The overall death count is 21,718 people. Florida, Texas, and some other Republican-led states are bucking federal advice to provide early doses of the new coronavirus vaccine to frontline workers, choosing instead to prioritize the elderly, a decision exposing differences in the nationwide immunization campaign. Federal recommendations give priority in the second tier to grocery store employees, transit staffers, and other frontline workers, along with people 75 and older. But here in Florida and in Texas, officials are moving ahead with a different strategy. They're offering vaccines to people 65 and older and asking frontline workers to wait. And again, if you want to comment about this, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Louisiana's newest Republican member of Congress, Luke Letlow, has died from complications related to the COVID-19 virus. Only days before he would have been sworn into office, he was 41 years old. He was put in the hospital on December 19th, and he died yesterday. A nurse in San Diego has tested positive for COVID-19 more than a week after receiving Pfizer's vaccine. But a medical expert says that we need to know that the body needs time to build up protection, so it can take 10 to 14 days after being vaccinated before you develop protection from COVID-19. So there's always that space if you're getting the vaccine. President-elect Biden says that the Trump administration's COVID-19 vaccine rollout is lagging and the nation needs to get ready for more hard times. This is what he said yesterday. We're going to hear a report from the AP's Sagar Magani.
We need to steel our spines. What's ahead?
Biden says the coming weeks and months will be tough.
Maybe the toughest during this entire pandemic.
With experts warning holiday travel and gatherings could lead to another spike in virus cases. Biden says there is hope with vaccine development, but he says Trump administration efforts to get Americans vaccinated have fallen far behind. The CDC says just about 2 million people have received a shot. Biden says at that rate,
it's going to take years, not months, to vaccinate the American people.
President Trump brushed off the critique, tweeting, "It's up to states to distribute the vaccines once they arrive at designated areas." Sagar Magani, Washington.
So if you want to comment about that, call us up at 813-239-9663. Or you can write in an email, send it to dj@wmnf.org. Some people have been pointing out for months that the death toll would be a lot less if we had a nationwide mask policy, for instance. And some people are blaming President Trump for the excess deaths. This is not a new idea. President Trump's niece, Mary Trump, told the Associated Press in an exclusive interview in September that President Trump is directly responsible for the vast majority of the hundreds of thousands of Americans who've died from COVID-19. This is what she said back in September, but is it more true today?
We need to steel our spine.
I no longer understand why people are surprised by anything that comes out about Donald. He absolutely doesn't care. And, I actually tweeted a quote from my book, which is not typical for me, but it was so relevant. You know, if he can profit from your death, he will. And then he'll totally forget you died. You will have served your purpose and are no longer relevant. As far as I'm concerned at this point, we're not talking about an accident or, an omission. We're talking about criminally negligent homicide. You know, this is incredibly serious. And I continue to be horrified by the lack of action in the Republican Party. Every death. You know, the calculation used to be if we had acted faster, a week or two faster in March, 90% of the deaths would have been prevented. So, you know, that's a lot of blood to have on one hand. But now it looks like the timeline has moved back. So I don't see any reason not to blame him for all of this. Donald is incapable of associating himself with what he perceives to be weakness. And in his mind, that can be kindness, that can be sickness, that can be death. So he just doesn't want to be associated with it. He prefers his narrative that everything's great and he's great. And I think on some level there is a bit of distraction going on, but on another level it's like he, for very complicated psychological reasons, needs desperately to cling to the idea that everything is just fine.
Well, that was Mary Trump, the president's niece, talking with the Associated Press way back in September, saying that the president was criminally negligent and that what is happening amounts to criminally negligent homicide. And she says that with all the deaths, that's a lot of blood to have on one's hands, blaming the president for the deaths. And this is back in September. Now today, with all the deaths that we have, and the studies that show that had we had a stronger mask policy, that a lot of the cases and deaths would have been avoided. How much responsibility does the president have for the excess deaths? What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Brian writes in regarding the Cuban-American question, says, since the Clinton administration agreement, 20,000 visas are granted to Cuban citizens to come to the U.S. every year. This policy was continued under President Bush and again under Obama, but it was stopped by Trump. So far, for For the past 4 years, 80,000 Cuban citizens were prevented from coming to the U.S. 80,000 Cuban citizens were denied the freedom of America, writes Brian. And then Brian goes on to say, why didn't the Democratic Party publicize this and pound this reality on the airwaves throughout the state of Florida through the recent election? That's Brian's email. What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Danny in Tampa. Danny, what would you like to comment about?
Yes, Rob. Good morning. I would like to say that Trump has 100% responsibility and for the deaths and that. And also, I'd like to say, so there is a chance still for the $2,000, right? A slight chance?
No. And in fact, I would say just and you know, I'm not in Washington, but I would say that there's a pretty good chance that the $2,000 is not going to happen before the inauguration.
Right, before inauguration, I heard that the senators would have to stay there all week, and Bernie wanted to do something about it, and they're going to go home. Well, you know what? Maybe after the inauguration, and Joe Biden could make that up. Hopefully. Also, you know, I'd like to say that I've never had a cell phone in my life or a computer, and there's two famous Americans that had that way, and I found out about it. One is a musician by the name of Stevie Nicks.
Really?
And the other one is none other than Christopher Walken on Stephen Colbert. He says Stephen Colbert asked him, do you know how to go ahead and do that? He goes, no, I don't know that. Somebody would have to do that for me. So we're a growing bunch of analog people, and analog will make a comeback, and digital will be gone.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Danny.
All right. Later,
thank you. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Charles in Tampa. Charles, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Real briefly, and thank you for answering the call. Number one, Harry Truman said the buck stops here. And so I believe that Donald Trump has a great deal of responsibility for the situation we have in this country with COVID. And I believe he may not have pulled the trigger, but he has liability for the thousands, the tens and thousands of Americans who've died. Secondly, regarding the Cuba policy, it's interesting to me that the Trump administration would stop those visas because the Cubans have been given a special exception. And I think what we really need is one single policy.
Yeah, Charles, you dropped off. You're saying that we should treat all immigrants the same. The Cuban immigrants are treated with more help coming from the federal government than any other immigrant group. Is that what you're saying? Charles, we lost you. Okay. Let's go to Joe in St. Petersburg. Joe, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Say just one thing about the stimulus. I personally know a couple. They're actually, you know, friends of mine to a certain degree, my wife and I. And that for the last, I don't know, months, years, whatever it's been since this whole stimulus thing started back then, with everything that's coming to them, and these people are already old-time millionaires, with everything that's coming to them as a married couple, they get from the government, from different sources, $6,000 a month tax-free. And it just makes me wonder how many of these stimulus checks go to, okay, we're all Americans, I understand that, but it still makes me wonder how many of these folks receiving checks are like my friends who are wealthy and don't need it, but they're taking, if you will, kind of like.
How do they get the money tax-free?
In terms of the stimulus checks, there are other things that are coming from unemployment because they were holding down part-time jobs in their retirement just for something to do. So when they were laid off, they were eligible for unemployment benefits.
But we pay some of the, and Joe, we pay some of the, Florida pays some of the lowest unemployment checks amounts in the country. So,
oh, yes, sir, they do. Yeah.
All right, so they get unemployment. They've gotten the first, they got the first relief check. My check,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think was only $1,000. I can't remember, but I think it was $1,000. So they've gotten unemployment and they got one relief check each. What else are they getting, and how are they getting it tax free? That's what I'm wondering.
You know, I'm not up on all of that, Rob. And
you're making a claim. You're making kind of an incendiary claim to make people angry, and you're trying to light a fire here. And I understand you're why, but what you don't have the details. So
I apologize for that. So
why would you make that claim on the radio? Come on and complain about your friends, and then you don't have the details. Why would you do that?
Well, all right, I see what you're saying, and I do apologize. I just was curious about what I guess what I was trying to get to was how that the a lot of checks go out to folks that really don't need the money, where there's a lot of folks who desperately need it, don't get it, kind of thing.
Yeah, well, if your friends are unemployed and they got one relief check, I don't think they're I don't think they're going to vacation in the south of France this year.
No.
Yeah. Joe, let's be real. When you call up, let's be real, okay?
I tried to, and you're right. I kind of overstepped, but it wasn't
a
pun intended.
Yeah, I think you did overstep. Joe, thanks a lot. Thank you for your phone call. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Lou in Plant City says, so rich white Republicans get the vaccine before the workers continue? And the workers are continuing to risk their lives. I just want to clarify the situation. I read that report, and I'm pretty sure I was reading it from the Washington Post. And I don't have the original source in front of me. So I think you should look up the story yourself, Lou, because I read two lines from the story. We do things differently here in Florida. So is Texas. The federal guidelines say that everybody over 75 should get the vaccine. But then states should prioritize frontline workers. Well, our state has said everybody over 65 can be eligible for the vaccine. Okay, I understand they're old, but it's different. Our guidelines are different than federal guidelines. And I think I would try to, if you've got a computer, Lou, and since you emailed me, I know you do, I would look that up yourself and see what it says. But I think that we do things different than the federal government has been recommending. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Let's go to Kaylee in Tampa. Hi, Kaylee. You're on M&F.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
I want to say that the Democrats failed miserably in Tampa in outreach. I want to ask Patrick, I know he has the paper to run, but why don't he run for the Democratic leadership here in Florida? And I want to say, I can't get over how the Biden people did not include Castro down there in Texas, which was so vital in the Latin community. Thank you. Blessings.
All right, Kaylee, thank you. Thank you for that. You're listening to WMNF 88.5 FM. Let's go to Bill in Jacksonville. Bill, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Hello, Tampa Bay. Rob, you had that caller a little bit while ago. Rob, I think his name was, that was bringing up the point that these stimulus checks have been issued to people that absolutely do not need it. Now, the tax thing I'm not worried about, but I have to say that since 2011, I've actually legally been unable to work due to medical reasons and other reasons. I have been relegated to literally beg for my needs. And I applied for that stimulus check time and time and time and time again. And it was just like the unemployment. They put roadblocks up telling me that it's the wrong social number. I know my Social Security number. I've known it since I was 13 years old. And it repeatedly kicked me back. A woman that is well-versed in the system tried to assist me. She said, okay, you got it. You got it. It's coming. It's coming. I never saw a check. And I doubt I'll $600 check or the $2,000 check. And it's very disheartening because I am amongst the ranks of the disenfranchised in America. And I'm a 52-year-old man that has worked all his life, and it's rotten. I think both parties have failed miserably in all these areas. And that's pretty much all I want to say. Thank you for a great show. I love our listeners.
All right, Bill.
Have a great holiday.
All right, good luck in getting that relief check. Let's go to David in Tampa. David, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. I just wanted to make a comment about both of these stimulus programs. Am I missing something? But 100% of the money in both of these programs should have gone directly and monitored into state unemployment systems. Ergo, people out of work, people not spending money.
I think the problem with that is that if you're, let's say you're an Uber driver, or let's say that you are a contract worker, and many, many, many people are contract workers. They might clean homes for a living, for instance, and not report their income to the IRS. Maybe they do. But they don't have a regular job, and more and more people in the country are not employed the old-fashioned way, where they go to an office and work for 5 days a week. A lot more people are contract workers, and they work at the pleasure of their employer, and they don't pay into the unemployment system. Their employers don't pay into the unemployment system, and you could add more money to the unemployment system. I think that's a good idea. But you're leaving out millions of workers in the country by doing that if you don't give a check to everybody.
But, Rob, how do you give a check to those very people that you're talking about if they did not file a tax return?
Well, they did file a tax return. I mean, if you're an Uber driver, you're filing a tax return. But I'm saying what you said at the start was, why not give money, additional money, to the states for their unemployment system, right? That's what you said.
Shore them up, absolutely.
Okay, and I'm saying that covers part of the problem, but not the whole problem. The bigger problem is that we as a country are turning into independent contractors. It's happening here in Florida. It's happening in California. More and more people are not employed in the old sense. And that way, employers don't have to pay Social Security tax. They don't have to pay unemployment tax. They don't have to deduct for, other things. So what do you do for those people who are private contractors? And many people are.
I see your point, Rob. That's an exception to the rule. And I suppose rules have to be changed. And I know they tried to do it in California, put Uber and Lyft people as regular employees as opposed to contractors. But there doesn't seem to be much will of the public or political will to do those kinds of things. So
yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah. All right, David.
Insight, Rob.
Thank you. Good to hear from you. Let me just mention a few more things before we go on. Documents obtained by the Associated Press show that police officers in Nashville visited Anthony Warner's home in 2019 after his girlfriend told them that he was building bombs in the RV trailer next to his house. And a Nashville Police Department report shows that officers did go to Warner's home on August 21st, 2019. The report says that the girlfriend told them that Warner was building bombs. Her attorney also told officers that Warner frequently talks about bomb making. Warner did not answer the door when the cops showed up. Officers went to his home. They saw the RV in the backyard, but it was fenced off. They couldn't look inside. Apparently, they sent something to the FBI, identifying information. That's about it. They sent that to the FBI, and then nothing happened. So this guy was probably building bombs in Nashville in August, more than a year ago. And the police and the FBI really only took one stab at trying to get to the bottom of it, and then gave up. What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. A long-debated proposal that would allow people with concealed weapons licenses to carry guns here in Florida on college and university campuses was recently filed for consideration during the upcoming 2021 legislative session, which begins in March. Republican State Representative Anthony Sabatini has refiled his campus carry proposal, which did not receive a hearing either in 2019 or 2020. Under current law, people are barred from carrying guns on college and university campuses, and now Sabatini says he wants to change that.
Somebody's going to come with a gun. My bill makes you safer by taking the people that are 21, concealed weapons permit, responsible citizens, non-felons, and giving them a firearm so they can defend themselves if possible.
That's State Representative Anthony Sabatini. 813-239-9663. Liz in Spring Hill says that Congresswoman AOC has already had this covered when she said, just disperse the checks for everyone and then you have to reconcile it on your next tax return. If you make too much, you would have to pay some of it back, writes Liz in Spring Hill. So that's a good answer. Thank you, Liz, for that. If your income goes over and is more abundant than it should be, pay some of it back in taxes. Stephanie writes this, in defense of Charlie, it is possible for his friends to not pay taxes on $6,000 a month. He said his friends were wealthy, so they probably have investments earning capital gains. In 2019, a couple filing married jointly could have up to $78,000 in capital gains income at zero rate interest. The limit is $80,000 for 2020, writes Stephanie. All right, Stephanie, thank you for that. And let's go back to the phones. Let's go to John in St. Petersburg. Hey, John, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. With everything that's going on with all these different stimulus things, if you go way back when Trump gave his first $2 trillion tax break, and then COVID hit and the trillions on top of that, I got to go back to the guy who said it in the beginning, Andrew Yang, when he was running, you know, give everybody $1,000 a month if you're a citizen. No matter what your status is, a multimillionaire gets $1,000 a month. Who cares what he does with it? And you just start bumping down. And all of a sudden, if you really think about it, if you're making $100,000 a year, it sounds like a lot of money, you know, combined income with your spouse or something. But that $1,000 a month is suddenly, you know, towards your mortgage or college fund or whatever. And if you make even less than that, if you're making 30 grand a year and you got a mortgage, all of a sudden that $1,000 is almost pay. It actually alters your lifestyle and stuff. And it really, if you think about it, it can be done now because we're just dumping trillions of dollars that's going every which way, but maybe the right way if you think about it, you know. It's just a thought, you know, that guy probably actually had something going, you know, but it was too of a extreme idea, I guess, you know.
Yeah, universal basic income. All right. Well, John, thank you. Thank you for
that. Okay, take care.
Take care. Let's go to Nick in St. Petersburg. Hi, Nick. You're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Okay, I'm going to pull over real quick because I'm a DoorDash driver and I'm currently on a delivery, but I didn't need the stimulus. My job only got better when COVID hit and the quarantine shut down. But with the stimulus, because I'm putting my elderly family who I live with at risk every day, going out and working, delivering your food for 40 hours plus a week. But I'm going home to my elderly family that is very susceptible to COVID-19. We're putting our lives at the risk. I didn't need the money. I still took their money. And I've been able to help other friends that were struggling, bartenders, strippers, everybody in the service industry that got shut down and affected by this the most. And I was happy to be able to hand out hundreds of dollars to my friends, hundreds of dollars to my family with no questions asked because they needed it the most. And even the $1,200 didn't help them. And I was well off. And I don't pay taxes. I'm a DoorDash driver. I have not paid taxes in 10 plus years. I don't pay for sending money to the military and paying for these wars, these lackluster politicians that can't do their jobs right. I'm not paying income tax ever again. I owed $4,600 in income tax last year. I will not pay for the over-militarization of the police force. It's not illegal to not file tax. I'm supposed to, but I'm not actually.
Well, and Nick, I understand that, but the big question I always have for people like you, and I've talked to hundreds over the last 40 years, is what about when it comes time to retire and you haven't declared that you're paid into Social Security? So what do you do then?
I'm 35 years old, and I don't really see much of anything good happening in the future. I don't want to be taken care of. Like, I really don't. And bad things are, it's only going to get worse in the world. And I don't really plan for the future too much. I bought a motorcycle with my stimulus check, and I'm not going to take the vaccine. I know where the health food store is at, but I risk my life every day on the motorcycle. I risk my day every day working like I am now during this quarantine, and I'm not really worried about the future too much, and I don't think many people my age or younger are, because it's a glim hope of the way the world is going, and keep electing these politicians that do the same thing over again. There's no right and left. They're both on the same team.
All right. And Nick, I'm not trying to cut you off. We're out of time, but thank you so much for your call.
Y'all too. You have a great day. WMNF, and I'm a Circle of Friends member.
Thank you, Nick. I won't tell the IRS. Thank you very much. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments about this show back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Jessica Green, our phone producer today. This has been Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa.